Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Blog American Conservative Radio. My name is Tracy Coyle.
And I'm Bill Hinman.
Welcome to our show. If you want to join us tonight, our number is 646-652-2828. Also, we are having an online chat going at the same time on our website, www.AmericanConservativeParty.org.
Tracy, it's a gorgeous night out here in California, and I thought that I might talk just a little bit about civil discourse and political campaigns.
Okay.
I'm going to relate a personal experience here. Right after Senator McCain selected Governor Palin as his running mate on their candidacy's ticket, I got into a discussion with my family. Now, you have to understand, my family are all liberals. Every one of them, except for me. Either I'm the black sheep of the family, or we've got a whole lot of black sheeps in our family. But nevertheless, and we got into this email discussion about qualifications. And I made the point that the only candidate among the principals or the other vice presidential candidate that had actual executive experience was Sarah Palin. My youngest brother, who is, by the way, a Obama supporter and works on his campaign at a local level, immediately fired back and said, well, then we have to talk about judgment. And by the way, what about Bristol Palin's pregnancy? And I thought to myself when I read that, I said, now I wonder what in the world that has got to do with either one, Sarah Palin's judgment, or two, her qualifications as a candidate for the vice presidential selection for the United States of America. And so I put those thoughts into an email back to him. You would not believe the response that I got. The response was not, here is how this affects her judgment, point A, point B, point C. No, no. It was, how dare you attack somebody for mentioning Bristol's pregnancy? And I thought, now that's really strange. All I did was say, Bristol's pregnancy has no effect, has no bearing on Governor Palin's, one, experience, and two, her judgment. But no, I was attacked because I said, why are you bringing that up? It has no bearing on this discussion. The conversation degenerated from there, and eventually I was told I needed to apologize to everybody for saying, gosh, Bristol's pregnancy had nothing to do with the issue at hand. That's point one. Has anybody noticed Gary Trudeau's cartoon? Now, Gary Trudeau went to school with my brother at Yale. That's the brother who works for Obama at the local level. My brother thinks that he's really great. And I'm saying, folks, I'm sorry, that cartoon has nothing whatsoever to do with anybody's candidacy, has nothing whatsoever to do with their qualifications, has nothing whatsoever to do about their judgment or their experience. And yet, that is the level of discourse that the left brings to the conversation. Point three, has anybody else noticed the race issue? there's a lot of the race issue. Guess who brings that up? It's Senator Obama's campaign. I don't look like, and they're going to tell you that I'm funny looking and that I don't look like the people on the dollar bills. Excuse me? That had nothing to do with what his policies are or what he proposes. That has nothing to do with his socialist agenda. That has nothing to do with his plan to spend $1 trillion or better on social programs. It has nothing to do with it. And yet who brings it up? And they bring it up preemptively so that they can then play the race card. They can say, oh, look at those horrible people saying that I'm black. Well, first off, Senator Obama, you're only half black. The other half of your heritage is white. And by the way, I haven't seen you say very many good things about white people. If you look at your biographies, what do you say? White people are bad. They oppress people. I'm sorry, I didn't, I haven't, and I won't. You can claim all you want that I will, I have, and I did, but I haven't, I didn't, I won't. It is apparent to me, and hopefully to our listeners, that the level of civil discourse in campaigns is deteriorated to the point that it is no longer possible to have a rational, calm discussion of policies. And policies are what are going to govern us. Back in the 1800s, late 1700s, and I believe it was Alexander Hamilton, and I have to apologize because I don't remember who he said it about, said, oh, he's a monarchist. Now, in those times, those were fighting words. We had just thrown off the yoke of England and King George. That was a done deal. We won. So the biggest insult you could hurl at somebody was to say, oh, he's a monarchist. I sometimes think that it is too bad that the custom of dueling has gone out of practice. There was a certain finality to the winner of that. I think that until we can get to a rational discourse, a calm, measured conversation about who are we, where are we, how did we get where we are, and how do we get to where we want to be, until we can get to that level of discourse without hurling accusations of monarchist or, oh, she's not qualified, she has a pregnant daughter who is pregnant out of wedlock, or she is, oh, look, Larry Flint, king of pornographers, is making a look-alike Sarah Palin pornography film. Until we can get beyond that, we will not have peace. We will not be able to rationally decide who it is that we want to lead this nation. That's my rant for the evening.
Well, I don't disagree with you that I would certainly like to see that, but it's quite clear if you read some of the things that have been written about political campaigns, or I should say campaigns, because I don't know, there wasn't really political parties in the first 50 years or so.
Right.
But, the campaigns were extremely personal.
Absolutely.
And very seldom about policies or issues, but about how much that person is going to screw everyone up. So the mudslinging has been a part of the process basically from the very beginning.
Tracy, I don't disagree with that. What I'm saying is, if we hope for change, to borrow a slogan from Senator Obama, if we hope for change, then somehow we have to change that discourse.
I don't think it's possible, and this is why I don't think. Maybe it's a self-defeatist point of view. I don't think it's possible because, oh boy, am I going to get myself in trouble with a certain person that lives nearby. The liberal believes that their position has been arrived at by careful consideration of all the facts, by an intellectual evaluation of all the consequences, and a desire to improve the condition of one and all. Therefore, their position is unassailable except by somebody that doesn't care about the people that they care about, someone that is too stupid to be intelligent enough to analyze the consequences, or doesn't really want what they say they want. That is the problem with the liberal. Their position is so perfect that anybody with half a brain would come to the same conclusion that they do. And if, in fact, you don't, then you're either evil, stupid, or both. Because if they just cannot conceive of the possibility that you could come to a different set of conclusions with the same set of facts. They just don't understand that you could actually have two correct answers. That's just beyond them.
Mm-hmm.
So from that position, starting from that position on their side, there's no way to have a rational discourse with them.
Well,
because anything that disagrees with them is inherently wrong or evil. They're not going to discuss it because of that particular point of view. And I have seen it. I said this to someone a very long time ago. See, I see a glass half full. They see a container of hormonally induced chemicals that might be sufficient to fulfill the needs of a minority amount of people, but could be better if someone actually... You get the idea?
Yeah,
They're not even going to look at the idea of half full, half empty. It's
right.
Way beyond that point with them.
Well, you know, Tracy, I don't disagree with your analysis of what the current condition is. I mean, I think it's pretty spot on. I think what I'm really saying is this. Independents are becoming a larger and larger minority. I fully acknowledge that the majority of people pick one of the two major parties, and that's what they go with. But independents are becoming a larger and larger minority within that universe of political parties. And I guess what I'm saying is that if no one speaks out against the level of discourse that prevails today in our political system, then we don't have a hope of changing it. And if we wish to affect change, again, borrowing from Obama, I freely admit that, but if we wish to affect change, we first of all have to say, what is it that we want to change to? And frankly, I have to tell you, that's where Senator Obama and I differ. He says we have to change and doesn't want to tell you how it is that we have to change until after he's elected, of course. I'm saying if we want to change, we have to say, what is it that we want to change to? And my opinion, my personal preference is we need to change to a less inflammatory rhetoric.
Black.
Yes.
No, 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 no. I want to get a third opinion about this.
Okay.
We have someone that you and I both know that wants to offer a comment.
Excellent.
Dan Dressel is our director of communications, and he's on the line. Good evening, Dan.
Hi,
hello,
Dan.
Hello, folks. How are you guys?
Good to see you and hear you. Well,
it's
not
to see
you,
but
you good to hear you.
I'm going to actually make this very quick. I am roaming in western Iowa at the moment, so
I'm going to
get a thought out there. I partially agree with both of you.
Of course.
That's a good start.
I think one of the things that Obama has done very well this election cycle, and that Sarah Palin has done very well this election cycle, and that Senator McCain has not, is largely ignoring the chatter and staying on message and staying on what it is they want to focus on.
Yes.
They've both been attacked at very low levels by various people throughout the campaign. I mean, both of them have been attacked by people within their own parties at various levels in the campaign, and they both had the happy warrior stance. They both come out and spoken above it and spoken beyond it. And I think that's been the real key to both of their success within the season that we've had, is they've both managed to stick to their guns and their principles. Obama's principle mainly being smoke and mirrors, Sarah Palin's being I'm all American and there's nothing you can do about it and I don't care what you think. And because of that, they've managed to get people to listen in a way a lot of politicians haven't in a long time. Neither one of them has anything stick because they flat out ignore most of it. And as far as any attacks that come at them from either side, I don't see that ending anytime soon. And I don't really think it should, because some of that stuff needs to be brought out and it needs to be talked about. And it's part of the political discourse. As Tracy said, the things that were going on back in the 1700s would make us blush today. They were down and dirty. The things that were going on throughout the last 200 plus years of our existence, it were shocking to say the least. So I think that the key to being able to, as you say, rise above it or to speak on a different level is to have the head of the campaign speak at a different level to rise above the discourse and really let his subsidiaries and everyone else battle it out the way they're going to anyway. Because there is no way to completely ignore the chatter for all the people that are actually manning it day to day. You need to answer all of the different things, and you need to be willing to bring up things and see what will stick. I think the biggest issue I see against the McCain campaign is that they tried so hard to be honorable, and McCain himself was so much about honor and not getting into sleaze, and he focused so much on that he actually cut his campaign off at the knees months ago for things that are real issues, because the minute he brings anything up, all Obama's campaign has to say is, oh, look at him, he's digging in the dirt, now he's slinging mud. He actually cut his own self off at the knees for legitimate issues.
This is where I disagree, okay? In the sense that McCain he doesn't have to attack Obama. Obama doesn't have to attack McCain, okay? And we saw it at the end of his acceptance speech at the convention. And we see it damn near every word that Sarah Palin speaks, and that's passion. I mean, I want to see somebody that wants to fight for this. This was our big argument against, Fred Thompson. Come on, show us the passion. Show us the fire. McCain is, it's nice to be honorable, but if you're going to sit back and kind of go, oh, well, okay, that's fine. This is what, scream and yell. Get excited about it. I absolutely agree with that.
This isn't a speech contest.
Right.
This
Sarah
is
Palin
a battle for control of the country.
Sarah Palin doesn't yell and scream, but you hear the passion in her voice in what she's saying.
My take is just a little bit different. I see families being pulled apart, not just mine, but others. I see people in workplaces that that some are afraid to express their opinion because their political view is in a minority opinion. And I'm saying that the political discourse at the personal level needs to stop. It needs to become civil. It needs to become...
Too high.
I understand that that's Pollyannish. I understand that's simply my preference in terms of I want to have a rational discourse with somebody about policy because I tend to be a policy kind of a guy. I tend to be the kind of a guy that says, look, if you do this, here are some of the expected outcomes. But what I get is, oh, McCain is for whatever, and Obama is for whatever, and frankly, he's running a pretty populist kind of a campaign. And I'm saying, folks, you need to concentrate on what are the expected outcomes. Now, that's just me. People that aren't policy wonk kind of folks don't care a lot about that. They have that fire. They have that passion. They have that we're going to win. And I'm saying that isn't necessarily what's good for the country. And that's what I am preeminently concerned about. What is good for the country? Is it, gosh, we're going to raise your taxes? And incidentally, gee, how do you lower the taxes on 95% of the people when only 62% of the people pay taxes? How do you do that? What are the expected outcomes of that? Well, I think that the expected outcome of that is you're going to slow growth. But those kinds of arguments get short shrift.
I would agree with you there, and I would say that one of the biggest hurdles to what you're looking for
mm-hmm.
is the fact that, one, it would take a major renovation of our entire education system to bring people up to speed.
Yep.
Something that I'm very much in favor of, to getting people back to the point where they realize, yeah, they get a real education and not a left-wing education.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't force people to be informed. You can try.
That's right. You can't. I was particularly disheartened today when I learned that in an English textbook, brand new, 2008 edition, there are 15 pages of an English textbook devoted to Barack Obama. And I'm saying, let me see. The English language hasn't changed all that much. The rules of grammatical construction haven't changed all that much. How come we have 15 pages in an English textbook of Barack Obama? Doesn't make a lot of sense to me, folks.
Look, Victoria and I are on opposite sides of the political spectrum.
Yep.
You know, we have been together for 15 years, and we've managed to be able to speak about political issues during much of that time.
Mm-hmm.
We don't agree on much of anything, except for the results.
Yep.
In most cases, we can agree upon the results that we're looking for.
Yes.
It is possible to have the discourse that you're looking for, Bill. The problem is it's our responsibility to have it. We cannot expect, because the left is not capable of doing it. We have to carry the burden of making those conversations work. And Dan, you know, here's my thing about the education system. The people right now today in the United States economy that should be the most oriented towards capitalism and freedom are the ones standing closest to the government with their hands out.
Amen.
Absolutely.
And as long as the, you know, it's bad enough that the intellectual class believes that government is the correct solution. Okay? But now we've got the financial class doing it too. Okay? Now,
the financial class
that came
up through the liberal academia.
That leaves only one class that isn't, you know, standing waiting for a handout. Well, that's not necessarily true. The working class is being promised a handout,
mm-hmm.
and at least in some places, they're going, let's see, the intellectual class is getting their handouts, thank you for the educational system.
Mm-hmm.
The financial class is now getting their handouts. Why the hell aren't I getting mine?
Yep. And a populist message works really well with that.
Right. I mean, there's an ad playing here in Wisconsin right now that says, they're bailing out the banks and I can't make my mortgage.
Yep.
You know, what's the rip with that? It's an ad for a local representative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're right. How can you justify one and not the other? Of course, you shouldn't be able to justify either.
Exactly.
One should not be able to be used to justify the other. But it just goes, I'm just crazy about the financial markets.
I know, and that's an excellent segue into that.
Yeah. Dan, you going to stay on, or you got another
I'll
comment?
I'll stay on for another minute or two.
Okay.
It's worth 30 minutes.
I want to discuss some of the financial markets. Yesterday, the president and the secretary of the treasury, the treasurer secretary, called in the CEOs of 9 of the largest banks in the United States and told them the United States government was going to buy billions of dollars of preferred stock in their banks.
What an abomination.
It wasn't a suggestion. It wasn't an offer. It was an order. And to just show
Let me make you an offer you can't refuse, right?
Yeah. And to show everyone how benign this act was, the stock would be non-voting shares.
Oh, boy.
Now, I understand, I'm sure the common shareholders aren't real happy with the dilution of their position, but, you know, I don't think that this is constitutional. It's certainly not conservative. The banks have got to be wondering what's going on. But, you know, they've asked for this. Now, here's some of the particulars that I picked up from the Treasury announcement of what they were doing. Under the plan, the senior preferred stock sold to the government would pay a dividend of 5% for the first 5 years and 9% after that. The change is to incentivize them to get them to buy those shares back from the government at some point. Nobody has an idea where the hell they're going to get the money to buy those shares back, but hey, you know, let's just go on with this.
Yeah, what the heck?
But the government is doing this to assure the people that it's not permanently in the business of holding private bank stocks. Let me see. They're talking about putting in, I think the number is $150 billion.
Yep.
Okay, $150 billion times 5% is about $7.5 billion a year in dividends. I think that'll fund quite a few programs. And
no.
You know, when money starts going into the government, they don't stop collecting it. So I don't think the banks are ever going to lose government preferred stock. Government's going to take that $7.5 billion and go, hey, we can use this money forever. But the thing that really kind of gets me is, in addition, the official said, banks participating in the program will not be able to increase their common stock dividends until the participation ends. That tells me that every person that owns a bank stock on the premise that it is paying a dividend and those dividends will increase over time has just been told their stock is not going to be worth much more next year than it was this year.
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, we can pretty much guarantee over the next 5 years that stock is going to be worth less.
Yep.
I don't think this is a really good thing going on. The limit is 3% of the asset values or $25 billion, but it's $25 billion only goes to, I believe it's Bank of America and J.P. Morgan. The rest of them get less. I might be wrong. J.P. Morgan is one of them. I'm sorry?
The media's labels to the contrary. George Bush stopped being a conservative a long time ago.
I don't know that he ever was.
And the media likes to portray him as such for the sake of lambasting conservatives in general. But I would agree with both of you that even the pretense is gone.
Yep.
Been gone for quite some time. As far as I'm concerned with Medicare Part D, as soon as he started selling out to buy votes, now even before that with the steel concessions in West Virginia, as of that moment, I knew that this was just another blue blood. He was just another country club Republican. And he portrayed himself as something other for the purpose of getting elected.
Used to be called Rockefeller.
Same thing.
Right.
That's exactly.
There's someone posting on our website right now that has a desire to win elections. You know, frankly, if you want to be a Republican, they're interested in winning elections. Now, I'm interested in winning elections, too, but not at the cost of my principles. I'm going to get to that. Let me finish up this particular idea.
I'm going to go offline.
Okay.
But thank you guys very much for having me on.
Visiting.
I'll continue to listen.
Thank you, Dan.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There's a lot of people that think that this bailout is a good thing. But this is something that I don't think anybody's paying attention to. The only way for the government to do this, now listen carefully, here it comes, is to borrow money.
Yes, indeed.
Treasuries are paying less than 1%. The markets love it. Foreign governments are doing the same thing. But does anyone else see this as a disaster in the making? I mean, we have to go into debt to buy stock in banks that are in deep trouble, and I'm pretty certain I'm going to get to that. Anyway, over the last 10 years, Congress has overseen Freddie and Fannie.
Yes.
And the Democrats have used that as their own personal political slush fund.
Yes.
Can you imagine the havoc they can wreak with a President Obama and a filibuster-proof Congress overseeing an investment in the biggest banks in the country? I just, 100 years ago, the phrase, I'm from the government and I'm here to help, was either met with guns, derision, or outright hatred.
Yes.
Hell, that was the response 20 years ago. I remember Reagan saying something like that.
Yep.
Today, it's met with cheers and a 900-point rise in the stock market. I can think of nothing more scary than government getting into private enterprise.
There's a really interesting story about that. I don't know if anybody recalls, but back in the 1990s, early 90s, the Mustang Ranch, which is a brothel in Nevada, went bankrupt because they owed a whole lot of U.S. taxes. And the government took that over, was going to run that. Now, regardless of whether what you think about running a brothel and all that kind of stuff, the government could not make a success of running a brothel and selling booze. Now, how inept and incompetent do you have to be to make a failure of that business?
Well, the government has a lot of people that are working very hard at figuring out the worst way to do things.
Mm-hmm.
Look, for years, the Fed has been accused of using its considerable but indirect influence to affect politics.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people making that accusation in the past have been nutcases that failed to understand the impotence of the Fed to have such an impact. Not anymore.
Mm-mm.
How much do you know about vampire lore? Do you know anything about vampires, Bill?
Just what's in the popular press.
Okay, here's the item of interest, and it's appropriate here. A vampire cannot enter your home without an invitation. Well,
okay.
The financial markets have just invited the governmental vampire in.
Oops.
Every protection we had from government involvement in the marketplace is gone. By popular assent.
Bad news.
I said this in each of the last 2 weeks' shows. And right here, right now, I'm going to repeat it again. This bailout is not enough.
I agree with that.
We haven't seen the end of the beginning, let alone the beginning of the end. You know, it's going to get worse. This hasn't even begun. Somebody that I read regularly has increased their projection from $1 to $2 trillion to $3 trillion. I'm still at 10, so he's got a long way to go before we'll get there. But this bailout has nothing to do with it. You know, it's putting $150 billion into the banks safe so that they have more money to cover their losses. But their losses are going to be more than $150
billion.
Mm-hmm. You know, and, the estimated losses at this point is $2 trillion, and they've written off $650 billion. You know,
ouch.
So we're a long way away from it. $150 billion is not enough. No. You know what? Was it? Yeah, I think it's $150 billion. It might be a little more. All right. Let's start with the financial markets. I hope you were in the market on Monday. I hope you were out of the market last Wednesday. And if you're really, really good and virtually no one is, you were in the market last Wednesday and out of it on Monday.
Yeah. That's really apt. I've been out of the market for a couple of weeks now, basically in a cash position. And I looked at that 900-point rise and say, dang, I wish I'd had the foresight to be able to be in on that. But you know what? Saw that we had a 90-point drop today or something close to that. Not sure that I'm wanting to jump right back in yet. I think I want to see the volatility slow down a little bit. Not sure that it's going to.
I don't think so. Someone suggested a 1,500-point rise from the bottom, you know, and we're about 1,300 points into that 1,500,
wow.
You know, before it goes back down and tests, you know, the next level at 7,200.
Right.
You know, my argument is that some of the Dow stocks are so low right now that we simply can't go much lower, you know, given the stocks that are in there. I'm looking for the bigger, you know, NYSE report to see how that's going, and it's going a long way down too. I don't know. We'll see. On Thursday night at 11...
Tracy, I need to interject something here. Folks, whatever you hear on this is purely Tracy's in my opinion. This is not a forecast of things to come. You need to make your own investment decisions. Just a little disclaimer there.
Oh, yeah. If you're listening to me for stock advice.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Or me.
then you're either listening to the wrong station or can I have whatever you're drinking?
Exactly.
I'm only suggesting what I think is going to happen, and, you know, I didn't pick the top. I'm probably not going to pick the bottom either.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, on Thursday night at 11:30 at night, I went to my bank and took $200 out. Just, you know, for food and gas for the weekend, because after, you know, the day we had on Wednesday and Thursday, I just could not imagine what Friday was going to be. And if we were going another seven or 800 points down on Friday, I don't know what would have happened. And I just decided that, you know, a couple $100 in my pocket for gas and food, not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea at all.
Fortunately, Friday was a much better day than that. But nonetheless, I mean, that was the mindset that I had on Thursday night.
Yep.
Let's get off of the finances. Let's get on to the idea that we have a debate, the final debate tomorrow.
Yes, we do.
This is my opinion. John McCain cannot win based on his performance tomorrow. But he can sew up the loss. So, you know, that's my opinion as far as that. He can't win tomorrow, but he can absolutely guarantee his loss tomorrow.
Yes, he can.
And if he comes out being Mr. Nice Guy, then we can pretty much, you know, pack up the GOP for this year. Then the only question will be, how big is the win going to be for the Democrats?
Yes.
I think it's at that point, you know, we've been close to those points. I haven't said that in the debates up to this point, but I think we're there with this debate. You know, I've already posted my opinion about what I thought he had, what I think he has to do, but I don't expect him to do it. I expect that absent some particularly damning piece of information coming out in the next 3 weeks, Obama's going to win. Now, Victoria and I were discussing it this morning, and I said either Obama benefits from the reverse Bradley effect and wins in a landslide, or he suffers from it and loses in a landslide. But either way, yeah, either way, it's not going to be close. I don't think we're going to have a 1 or 2% split this time. I think it's going to be 5 or 6 points. It's going to be 5 or 6 points one way or the other.
Wow.
I don't think it's going to be.
Okay.
You know, and that's why, you know, I mean, it just doesn't seem right to me at this point that there are the division that's going on in this country is that equally divided. I really don't think we're at that point this year. This is not Bush-Gore. This is not Bush-Kerry. You know, this is an entirely different set of animals, and I really don't think it's going to be close. I think that by 10 or 11 o'clock p.m. on the 4th, we're going to know, and they're going to be saying it's a landslide. The question is going to be, who is it for? And right now, I wouldn't be hazard a guess, but I don't think it's going to be close.
I guess I see it a lot closer than that. I think that there is an undercurrent of dissatisfaction, one, with both candidates, but two, there is a dissatisfaction with particularly Senator Obama, only from the standpoint of he is a populist, but his policy prescriptions are statist, bordering on socialist, and I'm not ready to declare him a socialist, but he's sure getting close to that line. I think that people have a lot of questions left in their minds. And nobody knows what's going through anybody's mind when they're sitting there either punching out the chads or inking in their spots for their electronic voting machines or whatever it is, however it is that they vote. So I don't know that I agree with you that we're going to know by 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night as to who won the election. I think it's going to be a lot closer than the polls show it now. And actually, that brings up kind of an interesting topic. If you look at the polls, they oversample the Dems, they undersample the R's. They're about close on the independents, but a lot of that has to do with how do you ask the questions and in what order do you ask the questions. So I'm a little more optimistic than maybe the average person is. I just think that we still have a very evenly divided kind of a thing right now because of the economic situation. People are looking at pocketbook issues, but I'm not sure that. And yeah, I know that people vote their pocketbook, but I'm not sure that that's going to play out entirely in Senator Obama's favor there.
Well, you know, there are people that I know that have been lifelong Democrats. I won't say that they're scared to death of Obama being president,
mm-hmm.
but boy, they're not happy with him. And it has nothing to do with anything other than his lack of experience and, you know, his general positions on things being as far left as they are.
Yep.
On Saturday night, I attended a concert given by a group that does Baroque music.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very nice couple of hours of Baroque music. It was Bach and it was Handel, and it was they had a nice choral group, and it was very interesting. But one of the odd things, it wasn't odd, it was interesting. Friends of ours that we've known for quite a while through church are contributing sponsors to the group. And so they were there, and they ended up sitting right behind us. So we talked a little bit before the concert started and again at intermission. Now, they are huge Obama fans. I mean, this is a couple that, you know, if you could put leftism on a geographic map, they'd be over in China.
Wow.
You know, they're very, very, very staunch Obama supporters. They're active. They raise money for him. They contribute. They're active. Very nice couple, and we have had, I and them have had it's not a running joke, but it is a running joke, that I'm as far right as they are far left in our conversations. I don't think I'm that far right in as they are on the left, but, you know, I suggested we go play some golf on Sunday, and they said, no, they had an event, an Obama event. I said, oh, don't worry about it. You know, he's up like 11 points here. He doesn't need your help in Wisconsin. And they kind of laughed, and they said, well, you know, we don't necessarily believe the polls.
Really?
I thought that was rather interesting.
Yeah.
Because the most recent poll that came out today shows Obama up 17.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, let me tell you, he is not going to win Wisconsin by 17 points.
No, not a chance.
Not Snowball's chance in hell. Although they are talking about snow here on Friday.
Yeah, all right.
there's just no way it's 17 points. Even Victoria doesn't believe the polls. Nobody believes the polls anymore.
Yeah,
you know, and the idea that I said my point. It's going to be a landslide one way or the other. It's not that close. I agree that, you know, the polling is sampling it badly, but, you know, if the polling is oversampling Democrats by 12 or 13%, and he's up by 7 or 8 in the national polls,
mm-hmm.
what does that tell you?
Yeah.
That he's
got a big
down.
Time problem there.
He's down really
yep.
big.
Yep.
And I've made the argument that, you know, they should not be sampling based on likely voters or even registered voters. the reality is that over the last two presidential elections, it's been pretty evenly divided 50-50.
Yes, it has.
So if you have 50% Republicans and 50% Democrats, or even 45, 45, and 10% independents,
mm-hmm.
Obama's deeply in trouble.
Yeah, on those kinds of mathematics, that's true.
You know, and, you know, so I'm not willing to necessarily call it, you know, that it's in Obama's favor at this point, because I just think that it's quite easily possible to go the other way.
Yep.
Anyways, that's my take on the debate. I don't think it's going to make a big difference unless, you know, McCain can lose it tomorrow. I don't think he can win it tomorrow.
And Tracy, I don't disagree with that. I think that John McCain's task tomorrow is to keep his base fired up so that they go out and work for him and for Governor Palin. If he can make it a draw and he is perceived at least by those in his party and as having it be at least a draw, that they will stay enheartened and will continue to work for him. His biggest problem is if his people quit working and throw up their hands and say, "Gosh, we don't have a chance, and we're done, and we aren't going to win," he's got a big problem.
The greatest thing that could happen to McCain is the headlines on Thursday say, "McCain goes negative, attacks Obama."
Yes.
Those are the headlines on Thursday. McCain won the debate.
Yep. Yep.
And has a chance.
Yep.
You know, anything else is there. Now, kind of, you kind of led into this, so I'm going to go in. I have a specific appeal. We don't have lots of listeners, but we have enough. And this is my appeal. If you consider yourself a conservative, I want you to join the American Conservative Party today.
Amen.
Even if you're a little cautious, do it. Here's why. If Obama wins in 3 weeks, and if he gets a filibuster-proof majority in the House and Senate, Republicans will be out of power for at least 2 years, probably longer,
yep.
Unless something extraordinary happens. I'm
yes.
not saying good, bad, or otherwise, but it's something
yep.
just way out of line. Either the Republicans will have learned the lesson that playing to the political center is wrong, or they will just blame McCain as a flawed candidate. Given
yes.
the response after the 2006 elections, I'm pretty certain McCain will get the blame.
I think that's true.
This means that Sarah Palin will get the ultimate blame.
Yes.
Somewhere in January or February, someone from the McCain camp, if not McCain himself, will acknowledge that picking Sarah backfired. He or that somebody will be drastically wrong.
And in my opinion, almost criminally wrong.
We will have to speak out loudly that actions taken by Obama are anti-freedom when appropriate.
Yes.
Unfortunately, right now, we have a problem of being divided amongst ourselves.
Yep.
A recent poster to the ACP website wants to know if we're the right kind of conservatives before he joins us and works with us.
Oh, boy.
With all due apologies, there are conservatives and there are not. I am hereby apologizing to every social conservative security conservative, and economic conservative. If you stand for and live conservative principles, you are a conservative and welcome to join us.
Absolutely.
If you proclaim yourself as a conservative, but will not, have not stood up for those principles in action, then you're a Republican and your party is over there.
Yep.
If winning elections is what you're about, the GOP needs you. I would rather lose the election than give up being a conservative and standing for our principles. I'm
you know,
not
that,
religious.
That kind of echoes Senator McCain's stance of, I'd rather lose the election than lose a war.
Right. I'm
yep.
not religious.
Me
but
either.
I will be damned if I'm going to give up my conservative soul for the power of a corrupting political office. And I will stand in this party for that principle.
Absolutely.
But I'm
Absolutely.
Done with this idea that there are right conservatives and wrong conservatives. If you can stand on conservative principles, and I mean live them, then I don't care what your focus is, whether it be social, economic, or security. It is time that we as a group, as a force to be reckoned with, stand together, because the next 2 years, if Obama wins in November, the next 2 years, if he has a filibuster-proof majority in the House and Senate, the next 2 years are going to be a nightmare.
Absolutely.
And we have to be ready, willing, and able to state our principles and stand by them. You talked about, you know, giving somebody something to latch onto.
Mm-hmm.
I used to tell people all the time, if you're on the Titanic, you can't tell people jump off the boat, it's sinking.
Because
what they see is a boat that they are on, warm and dry. And they see a cold ocean. And you can tell them that boat is sinking. You can show them the boat is sinking. But no matter what, they're still dry.
Yep.
You have to throw them a life preserver or a lifeboat and say, there is your salvation. There is the place of safety. Get off the boat now. That's where you need to go. And
yep.
that's what we need to do as conservatives. We have to be able to be ready with those lifeboats, with those preservers, so that when people who bought into the stupidity of hope and change, the audacity of arrogance, when they go, oh my God, what have we done? We can't tell them, jump ship.
Right.
We have to show them, here is the conservative lifeboat. Get in, it's safe, it'll be dry.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's what we need to do. And if
yep.
you're interested at all in conservative principles, get on our website, www.AmericanConservativeParty.org, and join now and get ready. We either win in November with Sarah Palin on the ticket, or we spend the next 2 years getting ready to hold a better fight.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, Tracy. It really is a matter of Where are your principles? What do you stand for? And then you need to stand for them. You need to say, here is where I am. This is what I believe in, and I'm sorry, I'm not changing that. These are the base principles that I stand on, and
Bill,
if you don't like them, that's fine. Are we? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, sorry about that. I still showed about another minute to go, but that's okay. Okay, well, if we're off the air, then we're off the air.
All right.
Catch you
later.
Good
job.
All right, you too. Bye.